You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ron, thank you for doing this.
Hey guys, it's always great to be with you, man. This is actually more personal. I see your faces. I feel like I'm really part of the team instead of just the guy on the bulletin board getting blasted all the time.
I'm sorry about your rhino loss.
I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, you know, listen, oldest rhino in North America, second oldest black rhino in the world, and had a good life. But you know what? What really sucks, guys, is the older I get, the more you start seeing animals that you know and even people that you know start to pass. And, you know, these things that have been constants in your life for decades and they're not constants anymore. It's just it's one of those things. The only thing undefeated in life is Father Time, brother.
This was depressing. What a depressing start.
Have you watched Tom Brady?
Are you sure, Ron? Are you sure about what you're alleging?
Well, I mean, Father Time is not as effective on some as in others, but in the end, he will be.
So, Ron, I want to know, because we've got some questions for you and we're grateful here. We're stuffing you here into the post-game show. I want to catch you up on everything that's happening around here. Greg Cody's mad at everybody for a variety of different reasons. It's hard to understand. Greg, you're about to leave here dissatisfied with how today's show went, correct? You're going to be mad about how today went and your son also betrayed you. You want to get Ron McGill caught up on what happened here today in the post-game?
Well, first of all, seeing Ron's face always makes me happy. So thank you, Ron.
It means a lot, brother.
It means a lot. It's lifted my spirits. Yeah, it's been a weird show for me. Hasn't been particularly a lot of fun for me. You know, criticism coming in all areas. And
you seem bored by it.
Even your explanation.
Yeah, I am bored by the criticism.
Even your explanation doesn't have energy in it. We've been criticizing his energy all show, Ron. And so the way that he's chosen to discuss this with you is to be heartbroken and weary and tired and just filled with yawning indifference, forgetting that we're on the air and just sounding bored again. Ron is always on, Greg, no matter what his mood is. He just had a rhino die on him. The man is grieving. Right. And when we ask him to bring the energy, you watch him bring the energy because he's a professional, Greg. He doesn't sit here and just say, what can you guys do for me? I'm sitting here. Can you guys just do stuff for me? Like, bring some energy.
I like your t-shirt, Greg. I like the deer on it. It's nice.
Thank you. Yeah, it's half deer, half bear.
I see that.
Yeah, I got it in
bear.
Dare. Exactly. I got it in Colorado, as a matter of fact.
Beer.
No, it's don't worry about me. I'll be fine. You know.
Thank you,
Dear,
Greg.
And it ends with bear, Mike, dare.
Thank you for all your good work. Thank you for giving us the blessing of a son that would argue about some things. Deer or bear or deer or bear,
the
dare.
The joke he's going for is beer.
Ron, thank you again for being
Not
on
true.
With us. Did our listeners bring... Did our listeners do anything in terms of getting some money in your endowment? Because now that
yes, they did.
Now
yes,
that
they
we
did, as a matter of fact,
hey bear.
The hay bear, the hay bear hat sold out. I couldn't believe it. It sold out. They sent me a nice little check for the endowment. So there are a lot of listeners still really paying attention and like the hay bear, which, you know, was such an off the cuff thing. I'm just always surprised about how things turn out. So yes, the listeners have been great, and I've gotten a lot of personal notes, you know, via the Twitter account and stuff. I apologize for not answering back right away. I'm so inept when it comes to this social media stuff. I just don't know how to do it. So I'm reading all of that stuff, and I really appreciate it.
So what can you tell us? Because this has been a heartbreaking year at the zoo for a couple of different reasons, and I can't imagine, given your relationship with those animals, the idea of you losing the giraffe and the black rhino in the span of a couple of months, I don't know that you would have a more emotional time in terms of grieving than that, because I'm sorry, forgive me. It's Pongo is the giraffe and
Pongo and Toshi. Yeah.
And so what can you tell us about their stories just so the audience can
Pongo
know what your relationship was?
One of those giraffes. He was just he was our tallest giraffe. He wasn't necessarily old. He was beyond middle age, but he still had some good years in him had he not had this traumatic injury to his foot, which broke a bone, which we tried to treat. You know, we immobilized him, which was successful in and of itself is a story, because you can't really immobilize giraffes successfully. It's very difficult because they're so tall that you have to manage the way they go under anesthesia, how they fall. They can snap their neck. They can do all kinds of bad things during the anesthesia process itself. And then just waking up is a challenge. But we got through that. We were able to make custom shoes for him. We were able to get him up. He was walking beautifully. He was doing great. We were all so happy because this was against all odds. We got that far. And the shoes were able to mobilize his foot enough where he doesn't need a cast. You know, it's like a racing horse. They say when a racing horse breaks his leg, you got to put him down. Well, it's kind of the same with giraffe. You can't really put those limbs in a cast. So much weight depends on it. So when we got him through that, he got on the shoes, he was doing great. We're like, geez, this is fantastic. It was a happy, happy story. And then all of a sudden he threw the shoes and did something to where he refractured that hoof. And once we were able to immobilize him and look at the fracture, it was such a horrible fracture. There was no way to treat it. And we had to make that, you know, very difficult decision to put him down. That was really difficult because, again, he was a giraffe. You guys have been with me, Dan, when I brought your family out there. I'd go up on the giraffe platform. He would never come for anybody. And I'd start screaming, Pongo! Pongo! Like an idiot. I sound like a crazy man up there. But I did that on purpose because he knew when he heard that sound, that was a bridge to him getting carrots. He knew, hey, that's the sound that always, you know, preempts me getting carrots. So I'm going to head that way. And, you know, the keepers, the public, they were always amazed that when he would never come over, he'd hear me scream like that and he'd come running right over to me. So, you know, that always gives you a kind of bond that's really special. You always think, wow, the animal really loves you. When I realized he didn't really love me, he loved the carrots that I represented, but still, there's a special feeling there when you can call a giraffe. So it was great because I spent, you know, gosh, a great 10 years with him. And it was fantastic knowing him and getting to know him. And every time I had to do a television spot, whether I was doing something for Discovery or anybody else, he was my go-to giraffe. Wow, come on in. I know he's going to be in the shot. He'd be on my shoulder. He can stick out that 14-inch tongue. And it was a great shot. So he was a dependable animal. He was always very confident. He was nervous around cameras. He was great. The same thing goes for Toshi, except Toshi was even more difficult for me because Toshi, I unloaded him when he arrived from Japan. He came on a boat in from Hiroshima, Japan in 1983. Long journey overseas on a boat. And I drove the forklift, unloading him off the truck and opened that crate when he first stepped out. And he's, you know, all full of pomp and circumstance. Just, and he's stomping around. He's this big, you know, 2,000-pound animal, 2,500-pound animal, just stomping around with that big horn. You think, oh, man, that's a badass rhino. He's going to come at you. Look at that. That's everything a rhino should be. And then within 2 or 3 days, he was coming up to me and kind of nudging me, and I'd scratch him, and he'd lay down. I'd scratch his belly. It was like a dog, except this is a flipping rhino, Dan. You scratch the belly of this rhino, and he'd lay down just like a dog does and spread his legs and just get scratched, and he'd close his eyes, and sometimes even his back leg. You know, when you scratch a dog, how the dog's leg kind of goes back and forth? He would do the same thing. So for, you know, 30-plus years, he was my guy. I mean, anytime I brought somebody back, I brought all kinds of celebrities back there. Gloria Estefan, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, all the big guys. When I had to do a special tour like that, Toshi was a mainstay. And, you know, especially for me, Dan, to be honest with you, I know I'm rambling, but the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I do so much work with them. I cannot tell you how many kids, you know, fighting terminal illness went back there, met Toshi, and how many parents told me, on more than one occasion, parents would tell me, that's the first time we've seen our kids smile in such a long time. When you have this massive animal come up to a small, frail kid, sometimes they had a trach in, they had oxygen in, and this rhino would come up to them so gently. It's as if he knew that this kid was, you know, compromised and needed some affection. So I don't want to keep on rambling, but these are the moments that for me were indelible. Tells me how animals connect to people and how they can help people in so many ways. More than just a rhino, he was a bridge to something special for these kids. And for that, he was priceless.
Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Me, my wife and daughter went to an animal shelter a few weeks back, and I noticed how clean and how well run the actual shelter was. What makes for a good animal shelter?
Well, just that. I mean, when you go in and it's clean and you see the animals are not, you know, doing any kind of horrible pacing, they're not kept in these tiny confined enclosures. But when you go into a place that's clean, you see the help is happy. You see the animals are alert. They don't seem all, you know, overly depressed or frightened. I mean, that's not to say that a lot of those animals are not going to be that way just because of the situations that drove them to the shelter in the first place. But I'm telling you, Roy, you get a vibe when you go into those places. You get a vibe right away of how it smells, how it looks, the attitude of the staff. You know, as opposed to someone just being custodial and caring for an animal, to someone acting like that animal is their own personal pet. Those are the things that, to me, are great reflections of great shelters. People who do it not as a job, but as a passion.
Billy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Ron, I don't know if you saw the story of Joe the Pigeon in Australia. So in Australia, there was Joe the Pigeon, and Joe the Pigeon was suspected to have come from America as part of a pigeon race. And they think that Joe got on some sort of boat that was moving crates of some kind or something, and then made its way to Australia. And the Australian officials wanted to kill Joe the Pigeon because they said that he is a biosecurity risk because he came from America. There was a tag on his claw. I don't know what you would call it, but he had a tag. Yeah, he had a tag on him, and they traced him back, and they said that he was a racing pigeon. Now, the story took a turn over this weekend when they said this was a fraudulent tag and he did not belong to the United States. He was an Australian pigeon, so his life was spared. Are there animals, one, have you heard the story? Two, are there animals that have come to America that you are aware of that are biosecurity risks that need to be eliminated?
First of all, I hadn't heard the story, but yes, there certainly are animals that do that. And, you know, and they don't necessarily have to be big vertebrates like birds or reptiles or mammals. Probably one of the biggest biosecurity risks we have are insects. I mean, when we look at something like the wilt laurel that has been introduced here from Asia and is wiping out entire avocado groves, I mean, the economic impact of these invasive species coming in and destroying crops, destroying that type of economic engine is huge. So yes, biosecurity risks do exist. Things with birds, you know, I understand Australia's point. I don't know if I would have destroyed the pigeon right away. I would have put him in quarantine and try to screen him for anything he might be carrying. But, you know, it's like you can't bring a pet parrot from Mexico into the United States without going through a very intense quarantine period, because he could be carrying something, for instance, that's called Newcastle's disease. Newcastle's disease can be carried by parrots that can survive, but they can transfer it to poultry and wipe out entire poultry farms. So these are huge risks when it comes to our agricultural industry, when it comes to our livestock industry. Yes, there are certainly biological threats that have to be screened, and the job is enormous for our U.S. Fish and Wildlife, our U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's why they have these permits required. That's why they have these quarantine procedures required. But it becomes a bigger problem now with the amount of transportation, you know, whether it be boats, ships, planes, people taking their own stuff, smuggling stuff. People think that the government's trying to be crazy and they're trying to be just manipulative and controlling, but they're trying to protect our own economy here in the United States and our health, because they can bring in, as we've seen, whether it be Ebola, whether it be COVID, these things all start, generally speaking, from animals.
Greg, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Hey, Ron, I wonder, did a dodo ever live at your zoo, and what would you say is the legacy of the extinct flightless bird?
Well, the dodo is the symbol of extinction, you know. No, I never lived at
hold
our zoo.
Hold on a second, Ron. Hold on a second. What happened there, Greg? No. Go ahead, please. No, please tell us what happened there.
I just had a phone ring, and I
landline.
Shut it off. Yeah, a landline. I apologize.
I learned my lesson a long time ago, Cody. They used to call me because I had the Cricket ring on my phone, and they used to on purpose call me while I was on the air just to frustrate me.
Oh, Christopher probably called me just now. Are you kidding me?
You're probably right. I wouldn't be surprised that they tried to sabotage you.
Right.
Anyway, no, the dodo was extinct. See, he's calling me. Look at this. Mike Ryan calling me right now. But you see, these guys, they're a bunch of clowns. A bunch
That's
of
unbelievable.
A bunch of
juveniles.
That's incredible.
I anyway, was calling was Cody. Extinct. I heard it vibrating on Cody's desk.
A long time ago, the dodo became extinct. But it is the symbol because it became extinct because it was just killed and overhunted. And that was something that was an extinction directly associated with human beings. So that is You know, the symbol of threatening. I'm glad you're getting a good laugh out of that, guys. You guys are really funny. Really funny.
Ron.
All right, I'm on mute now.
I've been on mute. I learned my lesson years ago with these clowns.
Ron, at Zoo Miami, you guys have those really archaic-looking machines that make these wax figures that have a 600% markup on them. I wonder how much of a moneymaker that is for you guys, but it's an absolute ripoff. And why hasn't there been any real advancements in wax figurine technology over the last 35 years?
Why are you being so hostile, Mike? Because I had my phone on mute and your trick didn't get me when you tried to get the crickets going off on my phone.
Perhaps.
Is that why you're being so hostile?
Perhaps.
No, I think so.
But you charge anyway. $4 for these wax figures, and it's the same machine that I saw there when I was
on
a field trip.
There are 10 hippos now. There are 10 hippos
right.
named.
There are 10 Dan Labrador hippos, and those go for a lot more than $4, my friend. Listen, we tried to eliminate that years ago, and people went ballistic on us. They said, where are the wax museum? I want my kid to do it. I did it when I was a kid, and I want my kid to do it. If you don't put those things back, we're never coming back to the zoo. So they're back. People pay it happily. And you know what? $3 or $4 for the wax figure, it's nothing. How much do you pay for a drink, Mike, when you go get your little vodka or whatever you drink at the
bar?
Yeah,
your little vodka. Your little vodka. Your little vodka, Mike. Your little vodka drink.
About that.
That's right.
You know what? You drink the vodka and then you piss it away. It's
yes,
gone.
Yes, that's
you drink it and you like it.
That's
and
right.
Like it.
And you piss
it
away.
At least the wax figure you
He's
have
so right.
You pass it down to your children and your grandchildren. Yes. It's a memory that
He's
you can hold
so
on to.
Pass it down. It's made of wax.
Lose your memory.
It's made of wax. It breaks. It cracks over time. And by the way, your little vodka drinks cost me $13 over the weekend.
Go piss vodka.
How much you think it cost them to make it?
Roy, what do you have for Ron McGill?
Ron, Pablo Escobar had sent a couple of hippos back home with him in Colombia, and now they have overpopulated the place. What can be done to actually curb the overpopulation of those hippos?
Not much. You know, it's not like you can go and neuter and spay hippos pretty easily. They, unfortunately, that piece of property that they have expanded into is kind of like, you know, a forest. It's like an Amazon out there. So they've got a big problem, and that can be a real invasive species. Venezuela has a huge problem because they get started with 4 hippos, and now they're like over 100 hippos out there, and they are very destructive animals. And I got to be honest with you, Roy, I won't be surprised if someone ends up having to make the drastic decision of having to go out there and shoot those hippos because of the destruction that they're giving to that environment.
How much destruction would those hippos have towards the environment?
Phenomenal. Understand that they eat hundreds of pounds of vegetation a day. They can expand waterways. They can overcome, you know, different types of habitats and change habitats. They are in many ways what an elephant is to the savanna. Elephants will go into a forest, and that's how the savannas were established in Africa. Elephants just killed all the trees, so they became grasslands. Some would say, okay, well, grasslands are good. But when you change an environment that drastically with an animal that does not belong there, you're opening Pandora's box. And that's the problem, because by eliminating the habitat that'll be eliminated by the hippos, you might be eliminating animals that are very important in maintaining a balance, maintaining a food supply, controlling a disease. You're opening Pandora's box. These are things, you know, it's hard to predict, but it's always dangerous when you mess with Mother Nature, man.
Ron, good talking to you. If you want to contribute to the things that Ron is doing, he has always done this show for free. His love of the animals is clean and pure and true. And if you give to his endowment, you will find that his care and love will take care of your money, and that money will take care of the animals. So, Ron, just tell people they can go to worldofsui.com and under Billy's Angels, where Billy's Angel of Nuance and Do Good Deeds, you can find where the link is, worldofsui.com. But if they don't want to go to worldofsui.com and get bombarded by cartoons and T-shirt sales, where can they go directly just hearing this, Ron?
ZooMiami.org donations. And then be clear. You say you make sure your donation is restricted to the Ron McGill Conservation Endowment. And you'll get a personal letter from me and my forever gratitude.
Thank you, sir. The work that you do and have done across many decades has been impactful, and we always appreciate that your time is available to us.
One last question, Ron, before you go. What can you tell us about the meadowlark?
About the what?
The meadowlark.
The meadowlark is a beautiful bird, has a beautiful song, and, you know, I think Meadowlark Lemon was a great symbol of the meadowlark, happiness, positivity, and a great athletic bird. How about that?
Yes, that is exactly what we were going for. Thank you, Ron. Our new venture is called Meadowlark Media, and that's the reason for it, for all of there those symbolic things. So thank you for describing.
So it's not a fat bird.
It's not
a fat bird. It's a healthy bird. It's an athletic bird. It welcomes you in the morning, has a beautiful song, and it's always a sign of positivity.
Yes, and also the link to sports and Meadowlark Lemon with the distinct name. He covered it all. Thank you, Ron. We'll talk to you.
Bye-bye, guys.
So, Mike, what are we doing here before we get out of here for the day? Because we were talking off air and we haven't decided whether we can or should work tomorrow, because while it's an important symbolic day, it's also a day where we'd be basically doing a preview of the inauguration. We wouldn't be reacting in real time to anything that was happening with the inauguration because our show would be earlier than that. There can be sports that we can be talking about, although it might feel a little bit particularly silly and almost a little bit disrespectful tomorrow to just be talking sports. I don't know whether we'd want to welcome Greg Cody back so he can have a more positive experience, but his energy level stunk today. Look at him.
He's literally sleeping in the Zoom right now.
Greg, I thought for sure.
Greg, like you're 50 feet from the microphone, Greg. Like what are you?
I wasn't speaking into the microphone. Why do I have to be like this when I'm not speaking into the microphone?
Dad, like in all honesty,
Roy knows what I mean.
Dad, with all the vaccine stuff, are you feeling a little drowsy today? Because you do seem sluggish.
What am I, a doctor? I can't tell you why I'm sluggish. Maybe,
do you feel sluggish?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but I'm not using any excuses.
Now I'm concerned. This went from a bit to now I'm worried.
You have seemed out of sorts today. It has been strange in terms of what your energy level has been, and your lack of focus has been impressive even by your standards.
Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate that. The first compliment I've gotten the whole show. But no, it's all good, and I feel great. You know, I feel fine, like the Beatles sang in 1964.
Christ.
And flip side, she's a woman. Am I right, Mike Ryan?
You're so right.
You know, I think we're all good.
Okay, thank you. You're not all good today. We will. Should we do a show tomorrow, all right, Mike? How do you? Should we do a partial show? Maybe a little bit of a show.
Poe.
Maybe we can fire up the Zoom. I honestly think that there won't be much to react to, in part because we don't have working televisions here because we prioritized. And sports, Wednesday is notoriously a slow sports day. I think we should react on Thursday. Personally, also, I'm not getting paid for this, so I can save on gas. I'd really appreciate it.
Okay. That is a cost-cutting measure, the first of Meadowlark Media. It's going to be a giant company taking big swings. We got to save money on gas and not work tomorrow.